Welcome to the Citizens for Health radio show on Building Fortunes Radio with your hosts, Jim Turner and Peter Mingles. Make sure you check us out by clicking on the Citizens for Health radio show link on buildingfortunesradio.com. That's www.buildingfortunesradio.com. Citizens for Health provides over 100,000 supporters with consumer news, action alerts, and opportunities to take action. For nearly two decades, Citizens for Health has been a nonprofit pioneer in the natural health freedom movement. The Citizens for Health Education Foundation offers tools to inform the public of health issues and educate and influence policymakers. Jim Turner is here to spread the word about some of the most interesting topics that can affect your world. From the dangers of mislabeled or dangerous products to the questions and concerns of vaccines, you'll want to listen to Jim as he speaks on behalf of Citizens for Health. And now, on to our show with Jim Turner and Peter Mingles. Take it away, Peter.
Hello, everyone. Peter Mingles here. You're listening to us live on Building Fortunes Radio. It's www.buildingfortunesradio.com. For those people that might be unfamiliar with my voice, my name is Peter Mingles. We run this whole thing. And when we first got started with this whole thing, Building Fortunes Radio, I reached out to a gentleman who I had recently met. This is many years ago. His name is Jim Turner. He's the guest host on this one. This is Citizens for Health radio show. And Jim Turner is an attorney over in Washington, D.C., and he happens to be there right now. And he's been associated with these types of issues we're going to be talking about on the radio show for over 40 years. He was one of the original Ralph Nader Raiders, for all those people that need to look him up. Ralph Nader is like one of my favorite people relative to consumer advocacy and done stuff like things like you don't even realize most of the time, especially the newer crowd. And Jim was part of that whole entire movement, and eventually, although he didn't originally found Citizens for Health, shortly after it was started was on for Citizens for Health and been running that ever since as an attorney. And Citizens for Health has a website. It's called citizens.org, CITIZENS.org. Sign up for the newsletter. They give out action alerts. But I asked Jim, and I knew he was smart, and I knew he was a good guy, but I didn't realize how smart and how much of a good guy he is. And I do now because we've had years worth of this radio show, but super knowledgeable about a whole bunch of different issues that might affect your world and or your business. So go to citizens.org, sign up for the newsletter, go to buildingfortunesradio.com/citizens, re-listen to any one of the radio shows that we've done. They're all great information, and this is going to be another great radio show with great information as well. So Jim Turner, thanks for being here.
Thank you very much, Peter. I appreciate being here, and I look forward to having a good conversation. What do you want to talk about this morning?
I want before we got started with this, we were talking a little bit about continuing the vaccination story, then the stuff that's going on with California, which will eventually probably spread all over the place. So if you want to give our Building Fortunes radio listening audience a little bit of a recap of what we talked about last week and where we are moving forward, let's talk about what's ever happening in California with this new legislation.
Well, yeah, the governor signed a bill this past week that continues the assault on vaccine choice in California. Very specifically, he signed a bill which limits the ability of doctors to give medical exemptions. And then and more specifically, for example, any doctor that gives more than five medical exemptions in a year will be reviewed by the health department, and someone will step in and could even go back and take away the previous five exemptions if they felt like that. So what we've done is moved from the patient-doctor relationship over to the doctor-bureaucrat relationship. And basically, the patient is completely out of the picture in that situation. And this is a fundamental problem of the regulatory state. They have the authority to protect the public. But what they usually do eventually as time rolls on, they step in and take on the role of the public and argue that what they believe the public should do is what should be done. And then they punish people that don't comply with that. And so that's what the governor signed a bill with that intent and that purpose. It was a very contentious battle in the sense that there were many, many, many members of the legislature who were not happy with the bill, but were under strict constraints to have to vote for the bill. And in order to get the bill through, or I don't know if it was in order to get it through, but getting it through, the sponsor, Dr. Pan, who is a pediatrician and the largest recipient of drug money from the pharmaceutical industry in the state legislature, pulled a couple of very quick parliamentary maneuvers, got the bill through the Senate very, very quickly, and got it signed by the governor very quickly after that. We're talking 2 days, roughly, 2 or 3 days. It was a pure power play. It's not clear that if the whole bill had played out for the 2 weeks that it was expected to play out, that it would have in fact passed. But the problem that creates is that when the public is split on something, you can't actually begin to start enforcing it legally. What happens is you start getting resistance, you start getting social disruption. You now have lots of people moving out of California. It's got the largest growth in homeschooling that there's ever been in California. PAN's group is going to try to go and make homeschooling subject to vaccination. And also, by the way, he introduced a bill last week, just after medical exemptions was passed and signed. He then introduced a bill that would require flu vaccines in schools, and he introduced a bill requiring adult vaccination. All of that put together, this is an assault right on the individual rights, and the premise of Citizens for Health is that you come up with a much better answer for our social policy if you in fact have the public making decisions as individuals and coming to a conclusion. That's what our whole process is supposed to be about, and unfortunately they violated that in California.
Wow, and I know that like one of those stations that televise stuff, you can see some of the contention, I guess like the C-SPANs of the world or something like that. If you search for it on YouTube, you'll be able to find it. So if you look for PAN, P-A-N, and vaccines, you'll probably be able to find something on YouTube that shows basically some of the contention about that whole process. The governor himself, I think, was saying, why do we have to do this so quickly? How can this be done so quickly? I'm going to use my words here. We pushed this vaccine law through faster than we would have an act of war. I don't think we moved that fast after they bombed 9/11, like we were at war in 2 days. So the reality is like, what's going on here? So I don't know, Jim. It's really, it looks like the,
well,
it's I'll let you comment on what I just said.
Well, it's going to be a very interesting test of the Democratic reality, because the Democratic theory is that you need the community to be behind an action taken by the government, because all actions of government are taken in the name of the people in the community. And if you've got a fractured community the people in charge of government manipulate the process in order to become to get their point of view enacted into, quote, law, then the result you have is community chaos. And the problem we're dealing with here from the Citizens of Health point of view is a process problem. And that is, there is no doubt that the government has the authority to order mandate vaccines in the proper circumstances. But there is absolutely no doubt that PAN has not created a situation where proper circumstances can be discovered. What he's done is bypass the process and said government will make the rules and you will comply with them. This is a very unfortunate authoritarian maneuver. It will undermine the health of the community. It will undermine the immunity that the community needs. Immunity, just to give an example of how it undermines immunity, the natural unfolding of measles is to have measles in a period of time between maybe the age of 4 and 10, in which it's not a terribly damaging disease, and that creates immunity in the children, and the mothers of those children also get natural immunity, both from when they got measles when they were children and being in the situation that they're in. It's a natural immunity, and it's passed on to the fetuses. And then when those babies are born, they have a resistance to measles, which allows it to be it makes it less likely to occur. And when it does occur, it's less dangerous. But what's happening with the vaccines is that the childhood's immunity is not natural. It's synthetic, and then it has to be developed later on in life. And fetuses are now being born without the natural immunity to measles. So the point that we're making here, Citizens for Health is making, is that we need to be very, very careful that our laws are actually congruent with the natural realities about infectious diseases. Otherwise, we're going to have serious problems. Measles was a ravaging disease late part of the 19th century, and then it began to disappear, and it disappeared directly in line with the development of more and more public health measures. Indoor plumbing, you had laws about spitting on the street. I mean, you know, you weren't supposed to spit on the street because that was spreading tuberculosis and other diseases. And you had all kinds of cleanliness laws that were passed and all kinds of behaviors that were changed. And people began to have a public health awareness, and measles dropped almost 99% in that period of time before vaccination came along. It continued to drop after vaccinations came along, but it dropped at exactly the same rate as it had been dropping before, and more public health things were put into place. However, the fanatical vaccine mandators take the position that the drop that occurred from the day that the vaccine was introduced until now is where we should look. It's a very, very small part of the curve. And yes, the measles continue to drop, but it dropped 99% of its drop from the peak to now came before they introduced vaccines. And incidentally, that's true of virtually all infectious diseases. And what we're setting up in the mandate vaccine world is the potential for the same kind of problem that we have in antibiotics. Antibiotics are marvelous, wonderful, life-saving tools. They are, in fact, a miracle drug. However, we have so completely misused them since they were first found in the 1930s. We have people walk into the doctor's office and get an antibiotic for almost anything that's considered to be infectious. And the problem with that is that it creates antibiotic resistance. And now we have a massive worldwide resistance to antibiotics. We are deeply involved to the extent that mandatory vaccination against the will of the individuals who are being vaccinated, to the extent that that is spread as a policy, and it is the goal of the pharmaceutical industry and the legislators like PAN who are working with them. And I'm not saying that PAN is badly motivated. I'm not saying that. He may well believe what he's saying. But what we are leading toward is a situation in which we are going to become overuse vaccines and undermine their intrinsic capacity. We at Citizens for Health believe that this is a violation of the Constitution and a violation of sound public policy, and there are mechanisms that cause this violation to occur, and we're hoping that someone will step forward, and we will hopefully be able to help step forward with a lawsuit that will have the judiciary look carefully at how you make the decision when a vaccine should be mandatory. That is not – there are legislative decisions that you make that are not considered proper, and the courts step in and say, no, you can't do that. The example that I love to cite was the Judiciary Committee of the Indiana, Indiana legislature, voted to change the number of pi, that is the ratio of the radius of a circle to the circumference of the circle. They wanted to change that number from being 3.14 and then a whole bunch of numbers after it. It never ends. They wanted to change that to 3.14 because it was too hard for the school kids to work with that larger number. And they had a bunch of experts and so were telling why it was a good idea. Fortunately, there were other experts that came in and said it was a bad idea, and they never reported the bill out of the Judiciary Committee. But this is that kind of bill. They've made a bunch of scientific findings. They're not scientists. They don't know science. Dr. Pan's not a scientist. They did not look at the scientific evidence. They looked at arguments made mostly by pediatricians that are also not particularly they certainly don't have control of all of the science. There is science there that needs to be considered. And we're wanting to be sure that the courts look at this and in one way or another establish what the process is for telling somebody that they cannot say, I don't want a vaccine. That is a narrow process, and it's being used here in a very broad way. And so the example, you know, here they are already up against the problem. You can't get herd immunity by, you know, vaccinating only children. So you've got a community in which you vaccinate children, but most adults aren't vaccinated for the 10 items that are on the list with the department, or at least a large number of them aren't. So now they've got to solve that problem in their intellectual dynamic by vaccinating all the adults. And right now, the federal government has paid out almost, not quite $5 billion in damages to parents of children who have died or been maimed by vaccines. That alone makes it clear that this choice is a life and death choice for some people. And when there is a life and death choice for some people in the balance, we have to be have a much more rigorous process than pushing a bill through the legislature using parliamentary maneuvers. So we'll see. It's going to unfold. The public is roiling. You just can't make a law that violates the natural order of things. If you do make such a law, the natural order of things will come up and smite you. And we'll see how the smiting goes in this case.
Excellent information. So maybe you can give us a little backdrop of how we got here, meaning like the drug companies are looking for their next cash cow. So they had drugs like, I guess it was Vioxx, and they had other drugs as well, and then all of a sudden, you know, those got taken off the market, although they were miracle drugs, quote unquote, at that time, until they found that they were giving people heart attacks or strokes or whatever. And now all of a sudden it looks like, well, we're going to have to stay in business. What are we going to move to? How about vaccines? So can you kind of bring us to that evolution?
Well,
I think
that's a fair statement of what the public record shows. And I want to underscore that, you know, people like Dr. Pan and other legislators across the country who are moving to vaccinate all the children might very well be motivated by what they believe is the right way to see the world. What they have done, though, is not allow that their viewpoint to be challenged and looked at in balance. And so the result of that. The result of that is that we have people who are being forced to do something that has not gone through the rigor that the system is designed to set up. I am not saying that when we got all through a legal process that the courts and all the way to the Supreme Court and so forth and the whole process wouldn't say, this is the right thing to do. I'm not saying that that's definitely clear. I am saying that we do not know that it's the right thing to do because there are so many pieces of information that argue that biochemical individuality, the idea that each individual is different, is at play here. So there might very well be people who say, I don't want to take the MMR. I want to take an M, and then a few weeks later an M, and then I want to take the R a few weeks after that. That would be considered a violation of law right now, and you're not allowed to go to school if you do that. There are people who would say, I don't think we should take the tetanus every time somebody gets pregnant. And yet that is still one of the things that they're pushing for, and the tetanus is required of these kids. And it's not at all clear that, I mean, tetanus isn't even an infectious disease. So why they're required to take the tetanus shot is unclear. Now, when you piece all this together, you say, well, what's going on here? Well, vaccines are now among the most profitable drugs produced by the pharmaceutical industry. And these came on the market with a vengeance after they lost Vioxx and a couple of other multi-billion-dollar drugs because the FDA took them off the market. Now, frankly, from a citizen's health point of view, we were quite concerned about those drugs going off the market. Not that it wasn't the right decision given our legal system, but there were a lot of people who were citizens members who were in fact getting good benefit from those drugs and who were not being harmed by those drugs. But that was not the calculus that was being used. The calculus was, on balance, everybody's taking a risk and we don't know which ones are going to be harmed and which ones aren't. Therefore, nobody should be allowed to take that risk. We don't think that's the sound policy decision. You know, we're not opposing taking Vioxx off the market, because it isn't a kind of a rule that is out there forcing everybody to knuckle under to a legislative analysis and a legislative act. You know, when the government tries to force people to knuckle under, even if it's a small minority, it takes a very, very big risk because, among other things, it undermines its own authority. And there are a whole lot of people in California now who will never believe the legislature when it takes action. It will always be seen as a manipulation of political power. That's what's happening on so many of the issues that we have right now in our society. Now, the drug industry's position on vaccines is we need to make money to stay in business, and they were very, very clear. I got into this issue in 1970. The former Secretary of Health and Human Services asked me to take a look at it. I was working with Nader at the time, and the vaccine regulation was a complete shambles. It was over at NIH. They didn't have any idea how the law worked, and they were just completely wrong. And ultimately, over a couple years, the vaccine regulators were removed from NIH and pushed into FDA. The FDA is a much more scientific group in terms of the way it goes about things, but it is not at all subtle when it comes to applying the law. I mean, the FDA is a sister agency of the FBI. And very, very few people go around saying that the FBI is a scientific agency. And the FDA is not a scientific agency. It's a police force, and they use police force tools. So what happened is the scientific capacity over at NIH was operating without any ability to use the tools that are law enforcement tools. And on the other hand, here's the FDA operating as a police department, and they're trying to use the tools of science the way that the FBI uses the fingerprint lab. They use the tools of science in a way of supporting decisions that they're making. And in the mix of all of that is CDC, which creates guidance. Their guidances, their recommendations to the states. And they argue, hey, we didn't make a mandatory vaccine law. The states did that. The states say, hey, we're doing what the CDC told us to do. And it's all designed to allow products like these vaccines, and it's true for drugs, it's true for the Boeing aircraft. This whole regulatory system allows these things to slip through the cracks, so to speak. And they call them loopholes or whatever. And then what happens is, as an individual member of the consuming public, you're down there at the point of purchase, and you're being told you must take a vaccine. You're being told that these drugs really work. And then you end up with an opioid crisis. You're being told antibiotics are miracle drugs, and you end up with antibiotic overuse. You say you can fly with confidence, and then the planes crash because they have a computer program that takes over from the pilot and doesn't let the pilot fly the plane. This is across the board. On the vaccine issue, yes, it is a real opportunity for the drug industry to make enormous amounts of money, and that is in part what's driving this issue.
Excellent. So I don't know where to go from. Before we run out of time, you wanted to talk about 5G. So thanks for bringing this up. Is there anything else you want to bring this up on California?
No, but it'll be coming up over the next few months as we go forward. This PAN is now struggling to make the argument that this issue is over, and the public that is opposed to this kind of process is saying it's not over. So, the California framework is going to continue on pretty much until some other resolution than the one that's been done is in place. So we'll just keep doing that. But so we talked about 5G before the program, and I want to just say this thing called 5G, which is just a nonsensical name. It's a brand name. It's like saying Quaker Oats. I mean, it doesn't convey the details of what's actually going on. Or it's like saying General Motors. If you say General Motors, you don't know whether you're talking about a Ford, a Chevrolet, or I mean, you know it's not a Ford, but you don't know whether it's a Chevrolet or a Cadillac or a Pontiac or whatever it is. General Motors is a brand name. 5G is a brand name. It doesn't have anything to do with anything particular, but it covers over the fact that the government has just sold the publicly owned EMF spectrum, a public property that was the backbone of our communications for the last 50 or 60 years. They just sold that to private companies so that they can exploit it. And what they've done is the governments across the country were putting in a wired system across the country, And what these guys did was step in and basically buy the companies that were doing the wired work and then take all the money that had been raised from ratepayers to put in wires and ended up putting it in Wi-Fi. And Wi-Fi is not the best decision. And right now, because we've gone on Wi-Fi in our communication system, we're 41st in the world on telecommunications. Every other country that has a robust system is using the backbone of that system as wired, with some Wi-Fi as an adjunct supporter, which is what we should be doing. But that doesn't make the buco amount of fortunes that the Wi-Fi makes. I mean, these Wi-Fi companies make so much money. It's just unbelievable how much money they make. And what they do is they turn around and buy off all the rest of the society. Very same thing that's going on in the vaccine world, in the Boeing airline world, and in this, by the way, it's true in the, you know, antibiotics that I mentioned. It's true in a whole bunch of food regulation. It's true in housing. I mean, if you look at it, you'll see that the regulatory dynamic that is there is being used by businesses to create better profits. Now, I want to be very clear that I wouldn't expect them to do anything else. I mean, they're not public interest groups. What we should do is be sure that the government process is set up to manage the relationships between everyone in the society, treats them the way it treats everybody else, rather than being kowtowing to them. And that's a big problem that's going on. So Wi-Fi, the way it's being used, which is the 5G, is the direct result of the federal communications system making a bunch of decisions that are designed to spread this technology. Part of the argument they make is we're falling behind the rest of the world, therefore we got to do it. And then what they do is they give a tool to the businesses that are pushing out the communication system that is actually the tool that is causing us to fall behind. And we're doing that in a lot of things. I mean, we're of the 11 most industrialized nations, we're the 11th in healthcare. We are 35th in life expectancy. Most shockingly, we are something like 40th in the world in maternal birth death. That is, mothers dying in childbirth. We are 40th in the world. 39 countries in the world have better survival at birth of mothers than we do. We're identified as being, really at the lead of everything, but we actually aren't at the lead of everything. We get the reputation for being at the lead of everything because we do, in fact, create some very interesting cutting-edge stuff. Antibiotics, very important. But then we invariably beat that horse until it becomes negative. And we do that across the board, and we're doing it in Wi-Fi. And the 5G system is going to undermine us. Citizens for Health is helping launch and support what we're calling SafeG, where we're pulling together all the science and all the activists and all the research groups and so forth who are raising questions about 5G and saying, look, you policymakers need to understand these questions and address them. Don't start pushing things through committee hearings or pushing things through Congress without committee hearings or not having any involvement at all. The government of this country is the voice of the people, and we want the government to actually look at all of the issues that are out there. They should be holding hearings. They should be having research. They should be looking at experts. And with 5G, they're not doing that. And what they're doing is undermining our health, undermining our privacy. If anyone believes that their privacy isn't on the chopping block right now, or actually probably on the auction block right now, they're not paying attention. I mean, every single piece of data you have is being sold for a huge amount of money. Why is that? Why shouldn't you be the one selling it if you want to sell it, or keeping it if you don't want to sell it? That's the policy that should be looked back to. In addition to that, our national security is being undermined. The former chairman of the Federal Communication Commission wrote an article in the New York Times saying the thing we're doing in 5G is raising a serious number of national security questions. So we get hacked. We get hacked by the Russians. We get hacked by all kinds of people. We get hacked by private industry. Now, the reason that we are hacked as much as we are, in part, is because we have a Wi-Fi system, which is much more susceptible to being hacked than a wired system. We don't have control of our information as individuals or as a culture. And as a result, we're being batted about by the rest of the world. And it's very important to understand that these are real issues, that there is a process that we have been dedicated to since the formation of this country to sort out these kinds of questions, and that process is being gone around by people who have lots of money and lots of pull. And in the final, the tragedy of all of that, in the final analysis, they're going to be brought down just as everyone else is. And the danger, the fact that they're going to get their comeuppance is not a solace for the people who are going to be hurt as they go down. And you know, you just look at the drop in stock prices over for some of the tech companies. Look at what's happened to Monsanto. Look at what's happened to the company that bought Kraft Foods. I mean, all of them are having a very, very hard time. So I'm just saying it'll sort itself out. And what we want to do is have it sort itself out with the least amount of transitional costs as we can.
Excellent.
And Wi-Fi is one of those places. 5G is where it's happening. Look for SafeG. SafeG is our brand name that we're using to put out our ideas. And there are a lot of people in the industry even who are interested in it. Lots of technical people in the industry understand what I've just said, and they want to figure out how to solve this problem.
Excellent information. It was interesting. On a side note, I called my local representative that handles something, I forget, the utilities or whatever, and I said, do you know anything about the health risks associated with 5G? I called the local person, and I said, what are your plans for 5G? And he said, well, we're incorporating it sometime next year. And I said, has anybody ever spoken to you about the health concerns about 5G? And he's like, no, there's health concerns about 5G. And I think he was really sincere. Like, I really do think he was sincere. He was excited about the technology, because anybody who's ever had 5G connections versus 2G, you'll, or 3 or 4G, you'll be amazed. In the concoctions that we put in my home, 5G connections are like 700 megabytes per second on the wireless. On the 2G.
Yeah, but they're still slower. They're still slower than the maximum that we've gotten unwired.
Right.
That's why the rest of the world is beating us.
Right. And but the 2G is so much slower. So I could see from the techie appeal, people would want to use the 5G because it is so much faster. But with that fast speed comes a huge amount of liability as far as your body is concerned, according to a whole bunch of people. So it's really very interesting and fascinating, and it just looks like the money is overpowering the health concerns right now until the people with the health concerns kind of raise their voices like you're doing right now.
Well, it's not only the health concerns. It's national security concerns. It's
Absolutely.
Privacy concerns. The situation that we have is that the benefits of the 5G technology can be gotten and exceeded if you were to put in a mainly wired system, which is what we were planning in the 90s, and use the Wi-Fi as an adjunct. It's analogous to the same thing as antibiotics. I mean, antibiotics are fantastic. Wi-Fi is fantastic for the limited value that, you know, limited places that can be properly used. And if you put in a wired system, and you get 90 to 95% of everything you're going to get from 5G on a wired system. And actually, you can expand that wired system. It has way more capacity than Wi-Fi does. And as a national policy, that's where we should be, and that's where we were until the Wi-Fi companies got hold of the money, took it out of the utilities commissions across the country, got hold of the money and said, stop worrying about wired to the home. We'll do it with Wi-Fi. And then we went off onto this tangent that we're on where, you know, lots and lots of people are going to be harmed because it's going to be 24/7, 365 a day, 67 days a year. You're going to have more electromagnetic fields going into your home than the Russian embassy, the American embassy in Russia was receiving when the Russians were using EMF as a weapon. And that's a stupid decision to make. It's just a stupid decision. I mean, the Chinese are going to eat our lunch if we keep in Wi-Fi.
Yep. Excellent information. So on that note, anything else you want to mention? Otherwise, I'm going to let you go back to your business.
No,
work.
I think that's good. We're at the time here. We should probably stop. I mean, you know, these people have things they need to do. If anyone's still listening,
yep.
They have things they need to do.
There you go. Well, a lot of people listen. So this is a good way for me to mention. There's a lot of people that listen to us when they have time. So you go to buildingfortunesradio.com/citizens. You can share this with your friends. You can download this if you wanted to and drive along with it. You can copy it and put it on your text and listen to it when you're, you know, making lunch or whatever you might be doing anywhere else. So remember, you can find this information everywhere. And I'm going to say randomly, if you pick, you know, you can listen to the newer shows, but if you randomly pick any of the older shows, you'll get a wonderful amount of information, just like you gave us a little bit earlier on the drug company history on how we got here with vaccines. So for those people listening in, make sure you check them out, citizens.org. Sign up for the newsletter. You'll get the action alerts and go to buildingfortunesradio.com/citizens for all our Building Fortunes Radio Citizens for Health radio shows. So, Jim, thanks for being here. As usual, thank you very
much. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to the Citizens for Health radio show, brought to you by Citizens for Health on buildingfortunesradio.com with Jim Turner and Peter Mingles. Thanks for listening. For nearly two decades, Citizens for Health has been a nonprofit pioneer in the natural health freedom movement. Go to www.citizens.org to learn more and always listen in to Building Fortunes Radio, where our special host, Jim Turner, shares crucial information about many of the most important issues that affect your world. Citizens for Health provides over 100,000 supporters with consumer news, action alerts, and opportunities to take action. So listen in, get involved, and help spread the word. Be sure to check out the buildingfortunesradio.com website to hear more Citizens for Health segments with Jim Turner and Peter Mingle, and read about what's new on www.citizens.org. It's been our privilege to have you listen in. Jim Turner, Peter, and I want to say thanks for listening and ask you to go spread the word, tell a friend, join our newsletter, and go make a difference in your world.